Greetings, shalom, and welcome back to our the OU.org Nach online and www.etshalom.com in our study of the Book of Shmuel. And today we are going to tackle the seventh chapter of the first Book of Samuel, Shmuel Aleph Perek Zion, a chapter which, as I mentioned in the previous podcast, will really bring us to the end of the first book of Shmuel. Now, just to clarify, when we talk about Shmuel Aleph and Shmuel Bet, the first and second books of Samuel, that's really an artificial division. As far as the rabbis were concerned, the book of Shmuel is one single book. The division, which really goes back as early as the Greek division and the Greek translation of the Bible in the 3rd century BCE, was one that only entered Jewish consciousness in the 15th century with the advent of printing. However, it is very clear within the context of the text itself that Perek Zion, the seventh chapter, is the end of the first narrative cycle in the book. And we might properly title this cycle of seven chapters Sefer Shmuel. And when we get to the eighth chapter, which is a bridge to the next book, we'll see why. But the textual clues are quite clear in this chapter, as we will see. As I mentioned in the previous podcast, the first two psukim really belong to the previous chapter. As I noted, from the beginning of chapter 4 all the way through chapter 6, Shmuel's name is not mentioned. Shmuel's not in the picture, and that indeed is part of the problem. In the first half of the first verse of chapter 4, Shmuel's name is mentioned, and from then on we don't hear of him until we get to Perek Zion, Pasuk Gimel, chapter 7, verse 3, in which Shmuel again returns. So it's really appropriate to look at chapter 6 as continuing all the way to the first two verses of chapter 7, and that's why we studied them in the previous podcast. But pro forma, we will begin from the beginning of chapter 7. Vayavo anshei Kiryat Yarim. If you recall, the people of Kiryat Yarim above Abu Ghosh came down to get the Aron, Vayalu et Aron Adonai, Vayaviu oto al Beit Avinadav Bakivah, Vatalazar beno Kidshu, Lishmor et Aron Adonai. So they brought the Aron back, brought it to the house of Avinadav, and sanctified Elazar his son to be in charge of the Aron. Vayhimi Yom Shevet Aron Bekiryat Yarim, Vayibu Ayamim, the Aron was there for many days, Vayu Asim Shana, it turned out to be 20 years that the Aron was there, Vayinahu kol Beit Yisrael achare Adonai, and all of Bnei Yisrael either mourned or followed after Hashem. And now we begin properly Perek Zion. Vayomer Shmuel, and out of nowhere comes Shmuel, el kol Beit Yisrael lemor. I'm going to strongly suggest that the reader take out Sefer Bereshit, Perek Lamed Hei, and read it in parallel with this, and you'll see many parallels, many comparative or allusions of one text to the other that seem to indicate that Shmuel is deliberately building off of Yaakov's words here. Vayomer Shmuel el kol Beit Yisrael lemor, as opposed to Vayomer Yaakov el Beito. Beito is, of course, Beit Yisrael. Im b'chol levavchem atem shavim al Adonai. If you are really interested in returning with your full heart to Hashem, hasiru et Elohei anechar mitochachem v'ha'ashtarot. If they get rid of all of the foreign gods that you have among you and the ashtarot, I'll talk about them in a minute, V'achinu levavchem al Adonai. Prepare your hearts or focus your hearts towards God. V'ivduhu levado. Worship Him alone. What does that mean to worship Him alone? So we have to be clear on what the nature of idolatry was during the entire First Temple period. When I mean First Temple, I mean from the time that Am Yisrael entered the land and began to stray at the beginning of Sefer Shoftim all the way through the First Temple period, the nature of the idolatrous practices that Bnei Yisrael had, and more significantly their beliefs, was not what we would immediately recognize as idolatry. It's what's more properly called syncretism, meaning they would worship Hashem. They knew that Hashem was their God. Hashem had taken them out of Egypt, etc. But they would also worship the local Baal, And if you would ask somebody in those days why he's doing that, he wouldn't respond to you philosophically or with a defense of syncretism, but rather he would look at you as if, of course I'm going to. I've got to keep all of my angles covered. I've got to make sure that it rains on my crops, so I'm going to worship Hashem. I'm also going to worship Ashtoreth. Now, Ashtoreth, which is a name that appears throughout the Middle East in worship, is always a name for a fertility goddess. She's called Ishtar, Isis in Egypt, Ashtoreth, Astarte, Esther. These are all part of the same cult of the fertility goddess, Ashtoreth. And we're quite familiar both from Tanakh and from external documents about the worship of Ashtoreth and the use of the Ashtoreth in fertility rituals. And evidently, Bnei Israel were using, but they were not turning their back on God. We don't find at any point in Sefer Shmuel that Bnei Israel are accused of wholeheartedly ignoring God and embracing Avodah Zarah, but rather while they were worshiping God, they were also worshiping Avodah Zarah, and that's why Shmuel's words, if you look at them very carefully, are very, very exact. He says, if you want to worship Hashem, if you want to return to Hashem, worship Hashem exclusively, levado. Get rid of these foreign idols, and that's what you are to do. And that, of course, is explicated in much clearer fashion by Eliyahu HaNavi in his most powerful, famous stand on Har HaKarmel in Malachim Aleph Perek Yud Chet, where he says, you cannot walk on two thresholds at one time, or as we say in Yiddish, Mekenish Tansen Av Sveh Chasen, as you can't dance at two weddings, or in English, you cannot burn the candle at both ends. If Hashem is the God, worship Him, and if it's Baal, worship Him. But make a choice. And of course, Eliyahu, it's clear what the choice he wants them to make. And that's what happens here. Shmuel says to the people, if you want to really return to Hashem, you have to worship Him alone and get rid of all of these other gods. Get rid of the syncretistic relationship you have with God, where you worship Hashem, but just in case, you worship these other things also. V'yatzel etchem miad plishtim. And then He will save you from the plishtim. Now that powerful phrase is an echo, but a repair of the similar phrase that appears in Perek Dalet, when the people said, let us bring the Aron into the camp, and it will save us from the hand of the plishtim. And here it is, Hashem will save us from the hands of the plishtim. And we now understand that Bnei Yisrael, under the leadership of Shmuel, have come to a realization of the proper attitude they should have towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And you'll notice that even though the Aron is accessible to them, and they know where it is, they do not bring it into the war that's about to happen, or any of the future conflicts. Rather, they rely directly on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vayasiru b'nei Yisrael et ha-ba'alim et ha-shtarot ve'avdu et Adonai levado. Now, just a word about Ba'alim. The word Ba'al, which we're very familiar with throughout Tanakh, including in Chumash, was the generic name for the Canaanite gods. And therefore, the local god would be called Baal Zavul, or Baal Chatzor, or Baal Haran ben Achbor, or in Egypt you have Baal Tzifon. But Baalim was the generic name for all of those gods. So they got rid of the Baalim and the Ashtaroth. Ashtaroth, by the way, is the female consort of Baal. And they worshipped Hashem alone. So they dedicated themselves exclusively to the worship of Hashem and to belief in only Hashem as the God under whose control and whose protection they placed themselves. Now again, if you look at Bereishit Lamed Hey, you can see that subsequent to the massacre and the ransacking of Shechem, Yaakov turns to his family and to his household and tells them the exact same words. Hasiru et Elohei Anichar Shebetochem. Get rid of the foreign gods that you have among you. What foreign gods are we talking about? So the simple pshat is that when Bnei Yisrael ransacked Shechem, they took everything, including some of their idols, and Yaakov was telling them to get rid of them. There is a medrash that Yaakov was directly talking to Rachel because he suspected her about the Trafim, but we'll leave that for a different time. There is another parallel, or there are several parallels, between the rest of Perek Lamed Hey in Bereishit and what happens here, and when we come to it, I'll mention again. Vayomer Shmuel, kivtzu et kol Yisrael hamitzpata, v'etpalel ba'adchem el Adonai. So Shmuel tells all the people to gather at Mitzpah. Mitzpah is a peak in the land of Binyamin, which we should recall, and those of you following on OU.org who've been studying the Nachyomi since the beginning, will remember from Shoftim Perek Chaf, that the people gathered at Mitzpah to go to war against Giv'ah, against Shev Binyamin and against Giv'ah. Here, Shmuel gathers all the people at Mitzpah, and he's going to pray to Hashem, because remember, we're still in the middle of a conflict with the Plishtim. Vayikavtzu ha-Mitzpata, vayishavu mayim. They went to Mitzpah, and they drew some water. No explanation in the text what this is about. I'll share with you in a minute what the Radak says. Vayishpachu lifnei Adonai. They drew some water, and they spilled it before God. Now, what does before God mean? Normally, we would say it means the Aron, but the Aron is in Kiryat Yarim, and they're at Mitzpah. The two places are not near each other. So what does it mean? We have several possible explanations. And this phrase will show up several times in the text with no context of an Aron and certainly not of a Mikdash. What does it mean, the Fnei Hashem? It can mean that they built an altar and offered offerings and they spilled the water in front of the altar. It could be that someone stood there wearing an ephod, the mantic apron. Or it could be that it just means that they meant this is a ceremony that we're doing in front of God, but not that there was any physical object there in front of which they were spilling it. Vayatsumu bayomahu, and they fasted on that day. Vayimru sham chatanu ladunai, and they admitted we've sinned to God again with this idolatrous infestation. Vayishpot Shmuel bnei Yisrael b'mitzpah, and Shmuel judged. Now let's be clear on what the word judge means. We'll get to it in a minute. But let's look back at the whole pasuk. They spilled out water. What does this mean? So Radak says it was a sign of humility and a sign of asking for forgiveness as if we are lowly like water. And they're spilling their hearts out like water, akin to the pasuk in Eicha, Shifchi kamayim libeich, spilling their hearts out like water, spilling their souls out like water, asking Hashem to forgive them. Now the word lishpot, which is a key word in our passage, in this passage going to the end of the parak, is a word that really has several meanings. Or shall we say it has one meaning, but it has several applications. And the first thing is a comment on the name of the book that precedes Sefer Shmuel, and that is the book called Shoftim. Shoftim is translated as judges, but it's a horrendous translation. Because if we look at every one of the Shoftim in Sefer Shoftim, not one of them judges. Possibly, in that one verse in chapter 4, Dvorah is judging Vayalu b'nei Yisrael al Dvorah l'mishpat. The question is whether they came to Dvorah for adjudication of something, or for really what a shofet generally does. What is a shofet? So in the context of Sefer Shoftim, we know what a shofet is. From Perek Bet, in which the text says, Vayakem Adonai shoftim, Vayoshiyum. God raised up Shoftim from Bnei Israel when describing the Shoftim cycle, and the Shoftim saved them. So a Shofet is not a judge, but rather a Shofet is some sort of a military leader. But then how do we get to Shoftim v'Shotrim? And how do we get Ela Mishpatim, these judgments? How is a judge called a Shofet? The answer is that Shofet really means a leader who commands with authority. And it is directly related to a word that sounds very much like it, which is shevet, because a pei and a bet are interchangeable letters, many examples of that. And a shevet, what does the shevet mean? A shevet is both a staff and it's a tribe. How is a tribe, just like mate is a staff and a tribe, how is a tribe the same as a stick? Because the staff is held by the head of the tribe, and holding that staff is a sign of authority. And therefore the shevet is the group that rallies around and that has obedience to and loyalty to the one who holds the shevet. He then has authority over them. So a shofet is an authority figure who commands respect, but more significantly, loyalty. And therefore, when Shmuel here gets up and chastises the people, we say, Vayishpot Sham Shmuel Ta'am. Vayishpot Shmuel Bnei Yisrael, b'mitzpah, that he judged them. He didn't really judge them in any sense, but he did what we might call giving them musari, gave them ethical exhortation about their behavior and a reminder of how they should be behaving. We will see that this word shows up in a different, with a different meaning later on in the parak, but our understanding that shofet really is a very broad word, allows us to play with the different meanings that show up here. So in any case, Shmuel at Mitzpah, as Bnei Israel are ready and have demonstrated that they realize their mistake and they accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu as their only God, Shmuel then, shall we say, lays into them and very clearly gives them Mishpat, as it were. And now we move on in the perek. Vayomru vayishmu flishtim kit kaptzu v'nei Yisrael ha-mitzpata. And the plishtim heard that b'nei Yisrael gathered at mitzpah. And now, for the plishtim are concerned, if b'nei Yisrael, who are subjugated to us, are gathering at mitzpah, it must be that they're gathering in order to rebel or to start a war. So their first reaction, of course, is to come and attack. Vayalus sarnei plishtim, here we have the captains of the plishtim again, El Yisrael, vayishmu b'nei Yisrael, vayiru'u b'nei plishtim. So b'nei Yisrael hear that the plishtim are coming, and they're frightened. They've all gathered at mitzpah, they're somewhat vulnerable. Vayiru b'nei Yisrael el Shmuel. So b'nei Yisrael turn to Shmuel and let's say, Al tachareish mimenu, don't be silent on our behalf. Mizo'ok el Adonai Eloheinu, don't be silent from crying out to Hashem, our God. And notice, they don't say Elohecha, as they often say to the Navi, but Eloheinu, which is a good sign. V'yoshienu miad plishtim. And now we have as a very clear statement that they believe that it's Hashem who's going to save them from the plishtim, not the Aron or some other mantic device. And b'nei Yisrael turn to Shmuel and say, call out to Hashem. He takes a nursing calf, a nursing ewe. And again, this Allah, he takes it as a full burnt offering. Now, an Allah is a burnt offering. So what's Allah Khalil? A fully burnt offering. Why does he make it a fully burnt offering? And why does the text stress that? Because that's exactly what the people have committed to. The people have committed to full exclusive devotion of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and so to symbolize that, Shmuel brings a korban which is fully devoted to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everything is burned up, not only in Ola, but in Ola Kalil Adonai. Vayizak Shmuel Adonai ba'ad Yisrael vayaneu Adonai. And Shmuel then prayed to Hashem on behalf of Yisrael, and Hashem answered him. Now, what do you mean Hashem answered him? So we'll see in a moment. Now, watch, in this pasuk, we're going to see three things happening simultaneously, which have a causal relationship. Vayhi Shmuel male ha'ola, as Shmuel, that's the best way to translate it, as Shmuel was bringing up the burnt offering, uflishtim nikshu lemilchama b'Yisrael, at the same time the plishtim approached to go to war against Yisrael. Vayareim Adonai b'kol gadol b'yirahu ha'plishtim vayumeim. And Hashem caused a tremendous confusion. He caused a great sound with a great thundering on the plishtim. He confused them and they fell before Yisrael. In other words, as the plishtim are coming to attack, that causes Shmuel to cry out to Hashem. Hashem answers by bellowing or causing a great sound to affect the plishtim, and the plishtim are all confused and they run, and Bnei Yisrael then turn and attack them. That's the short version of what happens. Now we get the longer version. Vayetzu anshei Yisrael min ha-mitzpah. Now the army, anshei Yisrael means the army, turned around from mitzpah. Vayudafu et plishtim. They chased the plishtim. Vayakum an mitachat le-beit kar. They chased them west until Beit Kar. We're not exactly sure where that is. And slaughtered them along the way. Vayikach Shmuel Evan Achat. And now we're going to see how Perek Dalet has achieved another form of closure. If you recall, Perek Dalet was where they asked the Aron to help them, and they expected the Aron to help them. We've repaired that. But Perek Dalet was also the time where they had the battle at Evan HaEzer, and God indeed did not help them. So here, Vayikach Shmuel Evan Achat, Shmuel takes a boulder, Vayasim min ha-mitzpah uvin ha-shein. He puts it between two promontories at this place. Vayikrat Shema Evan Ha'azer. He calls it Evan Ha'ezer, just like the old Evan Ha'ezer, in a different place. Vayomar, and he declares, Adheina Azaruna Adonai, God has helped us this far. In other words, this is a rock which is a memorial, an andarta, to the salvation that Hashem wrought for Bnei Israel. And now, Vayikanu HaPlishtim, V'lasfu Adlavo B'Gvul Yisrael, the Plishtim were subjugated, they never again attacked on Israel. Of course, this will not last for long, but as far in the meantime, Hatiyad Adonai baPlishtim kol yimei Shmuel, and God's hand was against the Plishtim for all the days of Shmuel. Now, that phrase, all of the days of Shmuel, normally would be read as long as he was alive. That's how we read it throughout Shoftim. However, we will see that the Plishtim attack Bnei Israel and come very deeply into our borders during the life of Shmuel, but that's after Shmuel has left center stage. Right now, Shmuel is center stage. And even in the chapters that we read, where Shmuel was absent, 4 and 5 and 6, Shmuel was very much present in our awareness, and his absence was something we were aware of. In other words, he's the central character, and we're questioning, where is he? But now, when we get to the end of Perek Zayin, we realize the text is bringing Shmuel's story to a close, even while he is alive, and even while he has perhaps his most important task yet before him, appointing a king. And we see it from the style of the text here. First of all, it says, such and such happened for all the days of Shmuel. In other words, it's summing up his life. And now, watch. All the cities that the Plishtim took from Israel now came back to Israel. And that approximates what we read in Perek Lamed Hei of Bereshit, Pasuk Hei. The Bnei Israel traveled, and the fear of God was on all of the cities around them, and nobody attacked Bnei Israel. Again, the mention of cities. Me'akron v'ad Gat v'ad Gvulan hitzil Yisrael mi'ad Plishtim v'ahi shalom ben Yisrael v'ein ha'emori. So Bnei Israel got all of these cities back, and there, not only that, but there was peace between Yisrael and the Emori. Now, what's the difference between the Emori and the Plishtim? It's a very critical difference. The Plishtim, again, are interlopers. They are outsiders. They are people who are sea people who arrived here several hundred years ago. The Emori are the people of the land. They've been there for generations, for hundreds of years, thousands of years perhaps. And when Bnei Yisrael attack and defeat the Plishtim, we might think that the next thing would happen would be a conflict between Yisrael and the Emori. The answer is no. Even though they defeated the Plishtim, the Emori did not go to war against them, and they were safe from that. Now, the last two psukim, the last three verses, clearly are a mini bio of Shmuel, because we don't get this anywhere else. And they seem to close off the entire story of Shmuel, which is why I'm referring to Aleph through Zion as Sefer Shmuel, the book of Samuel. Vayishpot Shmuel Yisrael kol yimei chayav. First thing is, Shmuel judged Bnei Yisrael all of his life. Now, what does judged mean in this context? Here it means led, not judged. Shafat here means he led them for all of his life. And now we get an aspect of that leadership which really is judgment. V'halach midei shana v'shana, every year he would go, v'savav Beit El, he would make a circle, the first circuit judge, from Beit El, v'ha-Gilgal, v'ha-Mitzpah, to all of these places. This is likely not the Gilgal that you studied about in Yehoshua, but the Gilgal that's in the Shomron. V'shafat et Yisrael et kol ha-makomot ha-Elah, he judged Bnei Yisrael in all of these places. And here it likely means that he actually acted as what we consider a judge. Somebody would go place to place, and people would have a complaint, have a suit. They would wait until Shmuel came, if it was a very large issue, and they'd wait till he came, or a great question, and they would ask him, or he would adjudicate the case. And then the end of this piece is Utshuvato Ramat Kisham Beito. He would return to Ramah, because that was where his house was. Sham Shafat et Yisrael. There he led Yisrael. Now, there, Shafat has to mean something more akin to quasi-political or religious leadership, not judging. Vayivan Sham Mizbeach Ladonai. What else? He had a Mizbeach, an altar that he built in Ramah, where he lives. Why does he live in Ramah? Because that's where his parents lived. Whether they're still alive or not, we don't know. But evidently, and we get a clearer statement from this pasuk, that Shiloh is no longer. Shiloh is no longer because otherwise Shmuel can't be here. Shmuel has to live in Shiloh. That was the oath. And the second thing is, he has built an altar. And according to the law, you're not allowed to have an altar outside of Shiloh as long as Shiloh stands. Take a look at the Mishnah in Zvachim in the last parak, the Mishnah in Megillah in the first parak, that the difference between Shiloh and Yerushalayim is that while Shiloh stands, you may not have a bama, but when it's destroyed, you can then have a bama. When Yerushalayim is built, the Beit HaMikdash is built, you cannot have a bama, meaning an altar anywhere else, and even after it's destroyed, you can't have an altar anywhere else. In any case, as I mentioned at the very beginning, the end of this chapter gives us a very clear hint, if more than a hint, that it is closing off the story of Shmuel. And it does it in the following fashion. One of the textual devices used throughout Tanakh, a rhetorical device of Tanakh, is what we refer to as an inclusio, where the first part, the first sentence perhaps, or the first phrase in a story, and then towards the end of a story, will be the same phrase or the same idea, as if working like bookends or like parentheses that close it off. This is something that even comes into the world of halakha. We talk about formulating brachot. We have the halacha in Masechet Pesachim in the last chapter that every bracha you make, every time you make a blessing, the end of the bracha has to be similar to the opening of the bracha. Chatima me'in pticha. And that is the same notion of an inclusio, a literary style and device in which you begin with an idea and then you develop it and go off onto tangents and then ultimately come home to your first idea. How does Sefer Shmuel begin? It begins with a family in Ramah making a yearly pilgrimage to bring an offering. And how does it end? It ends with a man who returns to Ramah after his yearly circuit, and he builds an altar. And so we see, and there are several other places in which the beginning of Sefer Shmuel and the very end of Perek Zion come together to form perfect bookends. That is the end of Sefer Shmuel. When we begin chapter 8, we will be on the bridge between Sefer Shmuel and the next Sefer, whose name we will only reveal when we get to it in Perek Tet. Everyone should have a wonderful day. And the next podcast, we will begin our study of Perek Chet, the bridge between Sefer Shmuel and the next unit.